So thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's a great pleasure for us both to make the journey from Berlin, not quite as far as from Ghana. But anyway, so we're here today to introduce a project that we've been working on for past 9 months called Simulizi Magini, Urban Narratives. We'll introduce it in various stages. I'll talk about the institution that we work for, then we'll talk about the program, the funding of the project, work in the field, then we'll reflect somewhat on the role of the Academy and talk about how we plan to continue this program of events. So first of all, we are from the Habitat Unit of the TU Berlin, Technical University Berlin, which is situated at the Institute of Architecture. And I think there's a good argument for placing it in the development of the Tropical Architecture Academy following the Second World War, when countries were becoming independent. This was a movement that began mostly in London. Certainly London was the first real site of such a school. The Department of Tropical Studies at the Architectural Association, which was founded by actors who had worked for the British colonial government in various agencies. This Robert Gardner Medwin was one that he was working in the West Indies. Then we have Maxwell Fry and Jane Drew, who you may know, who worked with Le Corbusier in Chandigarh, but also contributed to the discourse through books such as Village Housing in the Tropics. Another figure who was involved in the development of this line of academic work was Otto Koenigsberger, who cannot be seen in the same context of colonialism, and whose story is very interesting, but we'll keep that aside. And he was the director of that school at the Architectural Association from 1957 until 1971, when he moved to the University College London and founded the Development Planning Unit. Also published this very influential book about tropical housing and building. Of course, this movement was not just focused on London, it extended across Europe and the States, and also began to have influence in African countries. And one of the first German examples is Georg Lipsmeyer Strotenbau in the States. The Allgäu brothers, who were immigrants, also produced this book around the same time, which focused on climate conditions and architecture, and indeed the focus on climate and not on social aspects of architecture, this very sort of techno-scientific focus of the discourse was one of the reasons it received quite a lot of criticism, and also being criticised for being a neo-colonial enterprise. So the Habitat Unit, where we both work, was founded in 1974 as the chair of planning and building in developing countries. It is now called the Chair of International Design and Urbanism. So we're very aware of this colonial background to our institute. We have a big focus on research there, and if you can read, these are research topics, but the one that we're going to discuss today is one that we've both been working on, Heritage from Below. And the focus of the Habitat Unit is global, looking at issues that are driving urbanization in all sorts of global contexts, and there is quite a big commitment to comparative research, so studying cities in different contexts across the globe, and also engaging researchers and PhD students and students from all across the world in this work. So yes, the project that we have been working on is Simulizi Magini, and the subject is urban heritage.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, we're fit. Tied together here.
Does it work? Anyway, so I'll just try to present briefly what our research was about, and hopefully sort of resonate with the previous presentation about needing more empirical data in terms of what it means to live in an African city and what the realities are of urban life there. And just As a side note, the project is funded by the Deutsche Kulturstiftung des Bundes, the German Cultural Foundation, and this is a sort of issue. This issue of founding is something that we are going to come back on concerning research in a bit. And so this program is meant to be a transdisciplinary inquiry on urban heritage and what it is, and it's very much supposed to be a collaborative exchange between students, artists, and publications between Dar es Salaam and Berlin. And so in terms of artistic inquiry, we have residency exchanges. In terms of academia, we have research and student exchanges, and the publications will be magazines collaborating on issues together, and as well as public events and talks that are very much centered around the notion, how do we put this research back into Dar es Salaam and not just keep it on the shelves of Berlin. And one of the most recent developments was a symposium held in Dar es Salaam less than 3 weeks ago, actually, on the 1st of April, and more on this later. And just sort of briefly, why Berlin and why Dar? Well, Berlin's context of post-Cold War planning playground is very famous, but is becoming increasingly institutionalized, and many voices are being completely left out in terms of participating and even having a voice in what gets to be saved, what gets to be destroyed, and what to put instead. And on the other hand, in Dar es Salaam, the complete lack of regulation in terms of preservation and in terms of writing those narratives of the city is also very problematic. And so in both cases, a sort of renewal of the discourse and the tools for defining heritage is very much needed. And so the main questions that we're going over is public consultation. How do residents see, inhabit, and eventually make the cities, and especially in Dar es Salaam? How do we portray accessibly, realistically, and openly these real lives? And in the end, during the summer school, this is what I'll go over right now. In the summer school, we had a commitment to documentation, collaboration, and dissemination of this research. And I'll go over how we did this, or attempted to. And the first question really was, how do you enter a space without imposing a question, without leading the interrogation, without you reusing those dichotomies such as colonial, post-colonial, such as center and periphery, such as migrant, native? How do you ask new questions? And in the format of the summer school, which was for about 3 weeks, we had 13 students from TU Berlin working together with 8 students from RD University in Dar es Salaam. And this was one of the most important points, because we wanted the students to work together as architects to be, as planners to be, as designers in formation. We needed them to ask the questions and find the answers with their own words. And by providing these platforms for interrogation and reflection, we hope to sort of change the future of academia to begin with. And sort of the first reality check that we had was the goal of the summer school was to produce maps of urban heritage in Dar es Salaam. And we quickly started to realize that actually people just don't use maps there. Even the architecture students, who are supposed to be vested in spatial questions, don't use the maps on their phones. And so we needed to check on this and find a new format for expressing what the research would be. And it's not a new format, but we decided to go with oral history, which are much more easy to express and to share, and which make a lot more sense in the local culture there. And just a quote from Muyabuso Mungozi, who is a researcher on Kiswahili language at the University of Dar es Salaam, and he says, "Today, after almost a century of colonialism and more than a century of literacy, Tanzanian societies are still primarily oral. This is in spite of the fact that the literacy level is believed to be about 70%, having dropped from a high of about 90% at the height of Nyerere's literacy campaigns in the 70s. Hence, for these societies and for Southern Africa generally, orality is not a marginal, semi-obsolete, optional activity, but a way of life. These are oral cultures, and a study of their oral modes of creativity and communication is indeed a study of the essence of their cultural existence." So we found this format quite relevant to studying the built environment and how it's a register for social interactions, power relations, and history in general.
Thank you.
And sort of the second question that we wanted to tackle was dissemination of this information. And thankfully, with online platforms, it's now much easier to have participatory resources. And this is what we're working on right now, is finding ways for people to contribute their stories online so that they can share them and express them much more easily. And another way of sharing was in the symposium that I mentioned earlier, we sort of printed out all the outcome, well, part of the outcome actually, of our research and made it available for people to take, and they could actually create their own booklets depending on what was visually attractive to them or what stories were striking. And in this sense, they sort of created their own cognitive maps of the city. And another aspect of this program was the artistic exchanges, and this is just an example of what was produced by Alex Roma, who is a German artist and who was in residence in Nafasi Art Space when we were there, and he made these wooden stools. He organized a series of workshops where he learned the local traditions of woodworking and eventually created, I'm not sure how many stools actually, which are now available at the National Museum, at another art space, and basically wherever people want to take them. And this is sort of his contribution to build on the very real tradition of just sitting around under a tree and exchanging stories that is very present in Dar. And a couple words on the symposium. We managed to bring together activists, scholars, thinkers from Dar es Salaam mostly, and this was important because it felt like, and this is the feedback we got, it was really the first time that all these interested parties were brought together in the same room to casually but seriously reflect on this question of heritage. And we also had contributions from Congo, from Kenya, India, and many other places, from researchers both based in Africa and in Europe. But maybe some comments should be made about the framework that surrounds this, and I'm just going to attract your attention to this bunch of logos that are always at the bottom of posters.
So yeah, so I think in some of the other presentations as well this morning and this afternoon, one of the elephants in the room has perhaps been funding, and we decided that we'd like to discuss this, and maybe as an open question. Our project is funded by the German Cultural Foundation, but we've also received money from the Goethe Institute and the British Council. Our major partner is DART, the DAR Centre for Architectural Heritage, which is majorly funded by the EU, mostly to renovate the BOMA, which is the oldest building in Dar es Salaam, to make it into a centre for architectural heritage. Our other partner, Nafasi Art Space, which is the space that hosts the residencies and is also a place where we've held many other events. It's a fantastic place. It's very important in Dar es Salaam for all sorts of people. It's funded again by the EU and the Danish Development Cooperation Fund. The space where we held the symposium and also paid for an extra member of staff for us to support the oral history collections and oral history consultant was the British Council. Another project partner was the Tanzania Heritage Project, which is dedicated to archiving and promoting Tanzanian music. You can see the old reels from the radio station from the 1950s, 60s, and so on. It is funded by, again, the Danish Development Centre, Music Mayday, which is funded by the EU, and Goethe Isotope, which is based in Massachusetts, and is into digital archiving, and Black Ink, which is the only source from Dar es Salaam. So clearly, these projects are not decolonized in terms of funding. And so Diane's going to continue also with the issue of language that we experienced. And you can see here, pamoja kwa muziki, muziki not being a Swahili word.
To continue on this line of thought, two ideas, one that are not going to be discussed right now because it's not the topic here, but one of these patterns of neoliberal, maybe neocolonization, but the second one being on the maintaining and spreading of language influence and the British Council, that is their mission, basically. And you have so many other institutes from European countries that have precisely this mission, mostly in cities of countries of the global south, quote. And in terms of language, I'm saying this because one of the first questions that was raised during the summer school was sort of the import of these foreign concepts into language, music being one of them. There was no direct or accurate translation of music in Tanzania before the Germans arrived with marching bands. The words that was used before and is still used, but to represent traditional drumming, it was ngoma, and it means rhythm, it means movement and life at the same time, which cannot be translated into our language or into English either. And so on the very, not first day actually, but one of the first days of the summer school, we had a brainstorming session with the students to sort of have the first impressions, what places they consider heritage in Dar, and it was brought to our attention that actually the students from Tanzania, when they were talking together in Swahili, were using the word heritage, the English word heritage, and we asked them then afterwards what would be a translation, and it was really actually difficult to come up with something that would be as meaningful in terms of the layers of what heritage is in English. And one of the possible translations is urithi, which means heritage, but in a material transmission of inheritance kind of way. But another interesting translation would be actually coming from kumbukumbu, which means memory, and its sort of spatial representation would be makumbusho, which is more of a museum or a memory space. And so because of these difficulties of translations, we realized that we really needed in our research to sort of put images, to put stories, so that people would understand what we meant. Instead of asking, what is urban heritage or what is this, we needed to ask, what places would you be sad if they were destroyed? What are places that you're emotionally connected to? Where do you go on your free time? What's the oldest place you've ever been to in your city? And all of this to sort of point out that this history is not ours to remake, but what we can do, however, is tackle the question of memory and the question of finding all these very individual stories that tell us more about the reality of urban life there. And I'm just going to share one that was written by one of your students called Carlo, and he was, of course, helped by one of the Tanzania students to translate it, and we're currently working to retranslate everything into Swahili on the website. And the story goes, Akbar, who's 81, identifies himself as a resident of the district of Posta, which is in the city center, sorry for that. He is a Muslim of Indian origin and lives in Agri Street, in a house that was built in 1913 during the colonial period. He moved to this house in Posta 15 years ago. His father had also bought it from the German. It's a building of three stories with a little courtyard. Apart from Akbar, one of his sons lives here with his extended family. And the part that was unfortunately skipped when I made the PowerPoint, sorry about that, mentioned that he used to live in a farm in a different area, and that the farm was taken by the National Housing Corporation after independence. And what I'm trying to get at is that all of these stories give us really good and really real entry points to start researching and to start asking the right questions. For instance, the question of Indians living in Dar es Salaam, the question of Muslims living in a country that is very cosmopolitan with lots of Christians and Hindus, the question of the German colonial administration and their planning of the city, the question of post-independence reorganization of land use, etc., etc. And another point was that the tangible results of this research was really geared towards the students, and most importantly, having them working together and having them be faced with the realities of an African city, really. And the feedback that we had from some of the Tanzanian students was that they had never even done this kind of fieldwork before. They had been with us to places they'd never been to in the city. And sort of this making room for their own agency was one of the crucial elements of the project. And of course, it's not scientific evidence, and the data is pretty hard to deal with. We're still working on how to represent it afterwards. But taking it outside of the classroom and outside of the office is one of the key elements of understanding the African cities. And this leads us to question the sources of authority to make up these narratives of cities, and most importantly, the role of the academy. And don't worry. Sorry. 1 minute.
1 minute. So very, very briefly, so we come to the question of how, which is something that has accompanied this project from the very beginning, is if we go into and talk to communities and take their knowledge and their ideas, how can we go about creating a platform that is accessible to them, where this the work that we then do is available to whoever would like to access it? How do we visually communicate this? How do we present this information? So at the symposium, we invited guests who had from academia, who had engaged these issues in other contexts. So in Kolkata and in Ghana now, Ian Jackson is working on an app which allows you to see historical images of the city which have come from the British Library, in superimposed on images of the city. When you're in the place, you get a beep on your phone and you can find information about the past of the city. Using archives such as the National Archive, they have a open access policy for some of their collection. Africa Through a Lens is one of them. And then Johan Laga, who's worked in Congo for many years, his idea of how to give back the research that he has done was in this Lubumbashi Biennale from 2010, where he presented his research on the city to the curators of the biennial, who then used it to develop routes through the city and superimpose the colonial past with Congolese contemporary art, making the whole city an exhibition. And I'd like to end. How we're going to do this is still an open question, and the project is continuing. We're having a design research studio this semester, then the students from Arde University will be coming to Berlin in August for a second summer school. And then we'll have another symposium and an exhibition at the end of the project with a publication. And we're following Creative Commons open access the whole way. So I'd like to end with the words of Joy Mboyo, who's from the Go Down Art Centre in Nairobi, who has instigated a project there, Nainihu, which is trying to understand what Nairobi is in terms of neighbourhoods and identity and spatial practices and culture. And she said, "How do we enter the space without leading the conversation, leading the interrogation?" Thank you.